Hello, and welcome to another episode of Starside Chat. I am one of your hosts, Aaron, and with me as always is Zach. How's it going, Zach?
Pretty good. It's gotten cold again here in the Midwest. So as it does, it will tease spring and then go back to winter, and tease spring and then go back to winter. But, you know, we're getting through it.
Getting through it, staying inside, playing some games. Lots of news to talk about this week. A lot of rumors, I guess, to talk about. But also there was that Future of Xbox event.
Yeah, so this was, I think, not as illuminating was the word you used when before we started recording as I think we thought it was going to be. But they, it seems like more or less saw the reaction to some of those internal discussions that were being had that leaked, and they were sort of backtracking on that. They were like, we're definitely not going to bring Gears of War to, to PlayStation. But they did say there are going to be four games that were previously exclusives going multi-platform. They were willing to describe them, but not say specifically which ones they were for some reason. But all the games media outlets are reporting that they are very likely to be Hi-Fi Rush, Pentiment, Sea of Thieves, and Grounded. And then Phil Spencer shot down Starfield and Indiana Jones going multi-platform.
Now, this makes sense. I mean, Sea of Thieves and Grounded both make sense to me because they are games that thrive when there's a large player base. So yeah, I feel sure. Like it's a no-brainer to throw that onto like Switch and PS5. Grounded as well, even though I don't think that made as big a splash as everyone thought it would. But I mean, it's definitely a game to be played with friends.
Yeah.
Pentiment is interesting because I feel like a lot of people discovered that because it was on Game Pass and they were like, oh, this is great. I wouldn't have bought this, but because it's on Game Pass, I played it and it was great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm curious.
I don't know. It's a weird one.
Some of the language they used too was like, these are games that more or less had sort of reached their potential in terms of like sales and players on Xbox. And that's why we're making them available elsewhere. And like, I think some of the discussion around this is like, is this the trend for Xbox? Is this like a slippery slope where like we talk about, okay, it's just these four games now. It's, you know, don't freak out. It's just four games. It's just four games. But like, when is it also going to be like Starfield and Redfall and Indiana Jones? Because they also reached their potential.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, I mean, maybe that won't happen, but it's like worth bringing up as like, could that be the case?
Well, like, I think all those Bethesda ones are more likely than something that's like truly, I mean, it technically is first party now, but like, I don't think we're ever going to see a Halo on a PS5, but I could definitely see, you know, Indiana Jones or Starfield eventually making their way there.
Yeah, I wondered about that because those seem like too iconic for the Xbox brand, but like people were talking about, well, what if that does happen? And like Jeff Grubb obviously was like the one saying Gears of War had been talked about as possibly going. And like, I a little bit wondered, like, if not new games, so like you wouldn't see Halo Infinite, for instance, on PlayStation, but like, what if the Master Chief Collection ended up there?
Mm.
It was stuff like that. It would be weird for sure, but but at the same time, like, all these media outlets are bringing up, for Sony and Microsoft, like, revenue growth is more important than, like, the console war debate. So, like, at some time, if Xbox feels like they're not growing and they need, like, access to a bigger player base, they're probably just going to start putting games on other platforms.
Yeah.
And maybe that makes sense for them business-wise, but, like, for the consumer, like, if that does start to become like a broader trend,
why buy an Xbox?
Yeah, at some point you still get back to that conversation we were having last week of why buy an Xbox.
So
it's something to keep an eye on. I don't think you necessarily let them off the hook for like all these internal discussions that somehow got leaked and made everybody freak out last week, but they did also like a little bit shoot down like the the idea that the console was going away by talking about how they're planning like their next gen console, and it's going to be what was it that Phil Spencer said? It was the largest technical leap you will have ever seen in a hardware generation, is what he promised.
That's interesting.
Seems crazy to me. I know, like, one of the other rumors that came out last week that I don't think we talked about was that their next gen console would basically be two SKUs again, where you would have like sort of the traditional home console, and then you would also have this other one that was less powerful, but it was basically a Steam Deck, where it was like a portable, you know, PC that you could play your Game Pass games on, but then you could also dock it to a TV. And I a little bit don't know about that, because I feel like having two differently powered consoles this last generation was a little bit of an albatross for them.
Yeah, and I agree.
So it's, I really did not expect to hear that they would be doing that again. Also, like, if you were gonna do like the Switch or Steam Deck style thing, why not go all in on that?
It's a good question. And this isn't in our show notes, but speaking of like generations, somebody at PlayStation this week was like, yeah, we're entering the latter half of the PS5's lifespan, which is kind of crazy to think about. But like, yeah, console generations generally are like 7 or 8 years, and we're at like the 4 year mark for both consoles.
Yeah, it's true. Like, we probably are in the sort of mid to late part of the console life cycle.
It's crazy.
It just doesn't feel like it, because
it's super truncated, because like no one could get a PS5 or an Xbox for so long, for like the first year or like 2 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if it does end up being like a fairly traditional like amount of time that these consoles have been on the market, it doesn't feel like it. And it will feel like a much shorter generation. And I think a lot of people are still kind of waiting on all of those like exclusives to stack up.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have talked about like comparing, you know, like the last generation of consoles and their exclusives versus like this console generation. And I don't know. I haven't done that. I haven't like gone through and looked at it at all, but I mean, I think you can make a case that it doesn't feel like it feels like we're still a little bit in the infancy for these consoles, but
I agree. Yeah. I feel like it's early on, but I guess it is definitely halfway if we're going by the regular metric.
Yeah. But I mean, if the console generations have struggled for sales, especially on Xbox side of things, like, I get why they would want to start pushing their next console, because that's a good way to sort of reinvigorate the market for your console. Get some new hardware out there and like have some sort of technological advancement of some sort to make people.
I wonder what he could mean by that. Because like the SSD was a big leap this generation. That was like, I feel like one of the defining things was like everything is going to be loading super fast now. But I don't know what else could happen.
What could be the technological leap? Because in past generations, you've been able to market by like, okay, the previous console was SD and now it's HD. Yeah. And then it was, oh, this was HD. Now it can do 4K. And that was sort of how you sort of benchmarked the technological leap that was happening.
Yeah.
We haven't gone to 8K. So like, that is not really a thing. And so we're not really to a point where you can make that kind of gigantic technological leap, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like games look pretty good, and we're getting to a point where how much better can they look? I mean, maybe we say that now, but they'll like really blow our socks off and we'll be like, how could we ever have not seen this coming? But
yeah,
but a little bit, I feel like, especially with the Switch, like, Nintendo has sort of proven time and time again that you don't necessarily have to put out this like super photorealistic, like crazy advanced hardware, as long as you're making good games that like run well for the hardware and are fun. Like, that's good enough.
Well, not to skip ahead in our show notes, but there was a report this week from some analyst that the Switch 2 is getting delayed until 2025.
I did see that. Yeah. I didn't read into it too much. So what exactly was the report for this?
It's expected to slip to March 2025 at the earliest.
At the earliest, okay. I mean, what does that mean for Nintendo's plans this fall? Because I feel like they are at a weird spot in their console life cycle where, yeah, like, we know that the next console is right around the corner and they're not going to want to release, like, a new Mario game for the past-gen console point this fall. So, like, what are they going to have this fall?
It's a great question. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they'll still have any indie games that come out, so maybe they're banking on... I mean, I don't know what the delay is, but I guess it's similar to, I don't know, that there's that apocryphal quote by Miyamoto that probably is not actually from him, that is like a delayed game will be, or a rushed game will be bad forever and a delayed game will be good eventually or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's just like some supply chain thing going on or something, but yeah, I don't know. I guess this originated, I think, from some person in Brazil who reported this, so who knows if it is legitimate or not, but I think we were all expecting it to come out in fall 2024, and so if this is true, yeah, I don't know what they do for like holiday season and stuff, and I don't know when they start to announce stuff either. Like, I was expecting them to announce something in the summer, because
yeah,
they announced the Switch in October and then it came out in March. So that's October, November, December, January, February, March, 6 months ahead. So I was expecting them to do it at some point soon to just be like, hey, guess what's happening in the fall? But now I guess maybe we'll wait until, maybe they'll do it again, just like the Switch, renounce it in October and it'll come out in March.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know. Yeah, I was expecting them to announce it in June and for it to go on sale in July or July. November.
That'd be fast.
Yeah. November is what I meant to say, but yeah, I don't know. That's crazy to me, that, because I thought we were done with all the, like,
I did too. Yeah, the supply chain
shortages
stuff.
And yeah, but maybe they need more time to like develop it. I don't know what's going on there.
Maybe they just want to make more so there aren't any shortages. I mean, famously, every time there's been a new Nintendo console that comes out, it's been kind of hard to get. Yeah. Even the Switch was like, we had no trouble getting it, but I know that I had a couple of friends who had trouble getting theirs, and they had to like go to a couple different stores. But I don't know. It's interesting. I would not have expected this news.
Before we move fully on from Xbox, though, they did say Diablo 4 was coming to Game Pass, and that Game Pass was not going to other platforms, which makes sense. Like we talked about last week, I don't think, you know, Sony's going to allow a competing subscription platform on their platform.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get your impression on, there was like one quote from Matt Booty, who was part of this panel on the podcast, who talked about how games like Fortnite and Roblox are sort of bigger than any one platform. And I thought the implication was they want to make games that had that kind of reach, which, again, like back to the slippery slope, like that would require them to not make their games exclusive to one platform, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, probably one of the most successful games ever made is Minecraft, which they bought and is available on everything. And that's why I say like Sea of Thieves and Grounded make sense, because there are other things where, you know, it benefits to play with friends, and it's sort of like it doesn't matter where you're playing. Similar to like Apex, how we can play with someone on Switch or like on computer. I think more and more it'll be like cross-gen make sense for like not massively multiplayer online games, but like, you know, co-op games, things like that. But
games as service.
Games as service. Not even that, but just like would you call Helldivers a games as service? That's what
not,
they want.
There's
they want,
not like a season pass.
They want a thing that like there's no barrier to playing it. Which, by the way, did you see that? We didn't. This isn't on our show notes, but did you see that No Man's Sky update? Update Omega.
I didn't. I actually am out of the loop on No Man's Sky. Surprisingly,
I think it's free to play now.
Is it really?
That's part awesome. Of it is. there's a paid version, but Omega lets you like get your foot in the door, and so now everyone can play. Yeah.
But Xbox basically wants every screen to be an Xbox, but the problem they keep running into is nobody's going to allow Game Pass on their platform.
Yeah.
So they keep saying that, and I keep going, okay, but Game Pass is not going to be on PlayStation, so why do you keep saying this? Like, what is the difference between it being on Xbox and PC, and then you being like, okay, but we still want it on every screen? Like, what do you mean by that?
I mean, there's those TVs that you can play directly on.
Sure, but like the technology's not there yet.
No, yeah,
and
right.
And they're also not specifically saying that too. Like, this is one of those weird like messaging things that I think sometimes Xbox struggles with. But I will say, like, I think we're seeing PlayStation make a little bit of a shift as well, because like Helldivers 2 came out as like sort of their first published game that came to PC and console day and date. And it's like proven a huge success for them. Like, I think I saw yesterday there were tweets about how it had reached like peak concurrence of like over 300,000 at one point. And I can tell anecdotally, I was trying to play on Friday night and I couldn't log in because it said the servers had reached capacity. And so I just had to play Like a Dragon instead, which was fine. But like, I don't know. If you're trying to play that game, you're still sort of running into issues because it has blown up and is a much bigger success than they thought it would be. And I a little bit wonder if that is like a sign of things to come, where Sony is sort of slowly narrowing the gap between like the console and PC releases, such that
I would love that.
Yeah, I mean, eventually they'll get to a point where you won't have to wait for the next God of War game to come to PC if you play games primarily on PC.
Mm-hmm.
But even that's a little bit of like a sign of like the industry moving a little bit more towards fewer direct like console exclusives, and or even like timed exclusives, where like eventually you'll be able to play this on PC, but for now you need to own a console if you want to play it. And so I wonder if they keep talking about how that is the way the industry is going. I mean, minus Nintendo, because Nintendo does whatever Nintendo wants.
Yeah,
but
you probably never see a Mario game legitimately on PC. Yeah.
Yeah. Although, like we talked about, when you saw Power World and you saw those numbers on Steam,
yeah,
I'm a little bit like, man, can you imagine if they released a Pokemon game like legitimately on PC? Like, people would go nuts for that.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll take any correct lessons from that.
No, I doubt it. I mean, maybe lessons in like how can we evolve the Pokemon formula, but like not in terms of like can we also release this on another platform?
Business lessons, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, not sort of the doom and gloom scenario that everybody was talking about last week in terms of like Xbox, based on what they finally did announce.
Yeah, I still think Elder Scrolls is going to be only on Xbox.
Yeah, I wonder about that, because I thought my first thought actually when I saw all of that was like, oh, does that mean I don't have to worry about, you know, where I'm going to end up playing Elder Scrolls because it's going to be multi-platform, or like what's the deal there? But yeah, like you say, I think it probably will still be an Xbox exclusive.
Now, I will say this, by the time Elder Scrolls out, do I think that Starfield will be on PS5? I think maybe.
I mean, that's a fair question. My real question is, by the time Elder Scrolls comes out, will that next gen hardware be the thing it's running on?
Good question. Yeah, it could be very far away.
I feel like that will be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Interesting stuff. I do think that, like I said, the conversation around like multi-platform stuff that was probably happening internally got leaked somehow, and everybody got wind of it and freaked out, and they were a little bit like, yeah, see that conversation? Yeah, we can't do this. And so they're a little bit able to shoot some of that stuff down based on that. But let's talk briefly. I don't have a lot more, I think, to say about this next news story we have in our show notes. But game developers were There was a long piece on IGN this last week that was actually really interesting to read about game developers sort of explaining the layoffs that hit Riot, Epic, and other studios. And in it, the conversation piece that came out of this was Immortals of Avium, and some of the, like, one of the developers that had worked on that sort of saying more or less that, like, a single player first person shooter was like a bad way to go. Like, you can't make a successful game that will make the sort of money that you need if that's what you're making. I don't know if I am fully on board with that sentiment, but I guess
I feel like it's heavily dependent on the game. Because, like, that Indiana Jones game looks interesting, and that's first person single player.
Yeah, and it's like a new IP, so people didn't know about, which, like, I want new IPs to be able to come out and be, you know, good and bought. I don't want everything to be like a franchise thing, so it is a little bit of a bummer that it didn't do well, but also, like, you could tell from the trailers that, like, the writing for that game and some, like, the story was not going to be what people wanted. Also, it suffered a little bit from Titanfall 2-itis is the word we can start using.
Yeah.
Where it just, like, came out at a time where it was not going to find success. Like, they just didn't position it very well.
Well, and I don't necessarily need, and their whole pitch for it, every time you saw this game, the subheading was Call of Duty with Magic. And that's not something that's super interesting to me. I get that other people are maybe interested in that, but that's not a hook that grabbed me.
Another interesting thing that I pulled from this story to talk about was there was somebody referencing a games industry meme about how people want shorter games with worse graphics, and they're not kidding. I mean, quite frankly, I would love games that didn't take 150 hours to beat.
Yeah.
So I'm on board with that, especially if it means, like, you can cut development time down, because, like, game development time seems to be ballooning, like, way out of proportion. And that's, I mean, part of the problem with the industry right now is it's causing the budgets to balloon out of proportion. And then when they do finally release the game, it's hard to make a profit on that.
Let's talk about this. This isn't on our show notes, but the 14th this week was the 5-year anniversary of Silksong being released. And that, yeah. I feel like that development time has ballooned a lot. They're still working on it. It is a super small team, so I get it. But it was also kind of frustrating because a bunch of people were retweeting the initial February 14th like launch thing from 5 years ago. So I would be scrolling Twitter and I would see a big Silksong thing and be like, check out this new trailer. And I'd be like, oh my God. but it was actually like a 5-year-old tweet that someone was just retweeting. But yeah, I mean, when you
didn't they also tweet on Valentine's Day that we're still working on it?
A guy in the Discord said, like, hey, we're still working on it, because another thing that happened was they updated their copyright on, I think, like, Steam, and the Reddit, like, exploded because of that. They updated it to 2024, which probably doesn't mean anything. But yeah, there was a developer or like a QA tester who has been somewhat involved in the community in like the Silksong Discord, just like did a very brief like, hey, we're still working on it, everything's fine. But no, Team Cherry, I don't think they've tweeted anything for months, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It takes forever now for games to, I mean, the pandemic was part of that, where we got this generation of like super long tails where Tears of the Kingdom was supposed to come out, you know, probably a year before it released or whatever. But I agree with this sentiment. Shorter games with not necessarily great graphic. I mean, I'm a guy who loves those boomer shooters who like specifically look super like downgraded and bad.
Yeah.
So I don't need like photorealism.
Yeah. And like Tears of the Kingdom, for instance, like it doesn't look like Horizon Forbidden West, you know, but it still looks great because it has a nice art style and you can still put a ton of time into that and enjoy it. But like, I don't know, like I think about a game we haven't talked about that's out that people are enjoying is Persona 3 Reload. And that game is like, those games are over 100 hours for sure. And I just am like, I would love to play a game like that, but if it were 40, 50 hours, not like it's going to take me 150 hours to see the end of this game. Like, I just don't have time for it. I'm just not going to put the time into it. Plus, like, it would take me months to finish that, and I could have played like five other games in that time.
True.
So like, I end up just not playing it at all. And so that's, I think, a little bit why, if your development time and your like production budget is going to balloon out of control, and then you're going to release this super long game and people are going to be too intimidated to even start it. Like, I don't know. I feel like that all of that is bad for business. And
I agree.
Maybe we should shift towards more like a little bit like what Obsidian is doing, where they're like, we're going to give you this like sort of a little bit Bethesda-esque style RPG, but instead of it being like 60 to 80 hours, we're talking more like 30 hours.
Mm.
I feel like that's a good way for the industry to go. If it means we get games faster and better. But I also, I guess the counterpoint to that is that more and more, it seems like people want games that they can play forever and never shift to a different game. Like, you'll have a game that'll come out and people will play it, and then they'll be like, I feel like I've done everything and there's nothing else to do. When are we going to get more content? It's just like, not every game needs to be like a forever game.
A living game. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you just play a game for like 40, 50 hours and then you had a great time with it and you just move on. But I don't know.
A great example of that is that Somerville game I played, the first game I played on Game Pass, which took me probably less than 5 hours. And even though I didn't like the ending, that was like a great little experience.
Yeah, great little experiences. I feel like we could do with more of those and less of the like hundreds of hours types of games. But speaking of games that may or may not be coming to Sony, there was news this last week about how Sony is not going to have any major existing franchise titles that will release before March 31st of 2025. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to have like Sony published games. That just means like no God of War and no Spider-Man type of games.
Which makes sense. I mean, those all, we just had entries in both of those. So,
yeah, I mean, I feel like the strategy for Sony and Microsoft is get to a point where you can have a quarterly release. And some of that is going to be, we published Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they're not necessarily going to always have like a first party thing, but,
I mean, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth bummed out by this. Is coming out right around the corner, and that's going to be great. And
yeah,
what this, I think, means to me is, like, maybe there's some stuff we're not aware of that's coming out. I mean, they've got to have a plan for the fall, I would assume.
Yeah, I would assume that they have some games lined up for the fall, even if it's not going to be a new God of War or a new Horizon game. But I guess we'll have to wait and find out what that is. I mean, they still have Rise of the Ronin coming out this, like, later this year as well. Like, maybe spring or summer or something like that. That's another Sony published game.
I wonder if we'll see them at Summer Games Fest this year. If they tend to not be there, but I wonder, because there's that DLC, The Shadow of the Erd Tree, that Elden Ring, and I feel like Keely is on the pulse of people who like Elden Ring. So I wonder if that'll be something they release this year.
Yeah, it's true. That could drop as well. So what's this rumor about a Mandalorian game?
Respawn, who, as we all know, makes Apex Legends, but also I think they made Jedi Survivor as well, and Jedi Fallen Order. Supposedly, they're making a first-person Mandalorian game where you play as a Mandalorian, and they're not, it's that's the rumor, but they have not like said, I think, what time period it's set in, because I'm not like super knowledgeable about Star Wars lore or whatever, but I know that the Mandalorians were a thing, and then I think the prequels happened and they became not a thing, and then they started to become a thing again after the original movies, or I don't know. It's confusing. But Respawn, I feel like, is good at making first-person shooters. Like, I love to play Apex Legends, and they have been doing, like, all of their Star Wars things currently have been third-person. They've been The Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor, and I think those are, people like those. I think if you're into Star Wars, they are great for you. And so I'm interested in Respawn going back to a more first-person single-player story, because I think I talked about last year, I played through Titanfall 2 for the first time. I'd watched people play through it, but I actually played through it because it was like $2 on Xbox. Mm-hmm. And I loved that experience. It's a great single-player experience, and there are some very memorable moments in that.
Titanfall 2 was great. And I think everybody's waiting on Titanfall 3. That seems to never be coming. But
yeah, it's unfortunate.
According to this GamesRadar article, it would be like a linear level type of game and not an open world game. And
also sounds great. It's like a Doom still, kind of.
Well, so what they're saying is more or less it's going to be like a Titanfall game.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's still a year or two away. And Giant Bomb's Jeff Grubb said that while it does have Mandalorian in it, it's not the Mandalorian, the show, the game.
Yeah.
So if that matters to you. But I don't know. I'm not super into Star Wars these days, but I am more interested in a like first person Mandalorian style game than I am like the Star Wars Jedi Outcast or whatever those games were called.
You know what it reminded me of when I read this article is, do you remember that game that never came out that was like Prey 2?
Oh, yeah.
Where it was a demo we saw, I think at like E3 or something, where you were like running through the streets of an alien world trying to track down someone. It was basically a bounty hunter game, similar to what I would imagine the Mandalorian game would be, where you're a bounty hunter. Although, I guess, I don't know. I've watched The Mandalorian, and I guess being a bounty hunter isn't the main thing Mandalorians are known for. That's just what, like, Boba Fett was known as. But I could see them doing a whole, like, there was a lot of interest, I feel like, in that Prey 2 that eventually got canceled, and then the Prey 2 that did come out was totally different. But,
Well, I never played the old Star Wars Bounty Hunter game that was like, I want to say a GameCube PS2 era game. I never played that one, so I couldn't compare and contrast the two if I had to. But
you know what else I was thinking about? Because I was thinking about like Mandalorian games and things like that. There was a game that came out for like PlayStation 2 that I rented from Blockbuster, not to date myself, but it was called like Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter. Have you ever heard of this game?
No.
It really fell down. The reason I liked it and the reason I picked it up from Blockbuster a couple of times is because the main character was voiced by Henry Rollins. Do you know who that is?
No, not off the top of my head.
He is a musician who was in like, I think I don't know anything about his musical career. I think he was maybe like a punk guy, but I was really into him. I don't know how I came into possession of these CDs, not to date myself, but I had a CD player. I used to listen to his spoken word albums a whole lot when I was a kid because he would tell these. It was not really a comedy album. It was sort of just him talking, almost like essays, but they were like comedic essays, and I used to love them. This is before Spotify, so I really only had a couple CDs. But he voiced the main character in Mace Griffin. I think it was called Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter, and I played it and I liked it. I don't think I beat it, but it was weird to hear his voice coming out of my TV screen. And I feel like that property is completely dead because it was not based on anything. It was totally unique IP. I mean, it was probably based somewhat on Boba Fett, but it's interesting. It would be wild to me if we ever saw a Mace Griffin game again. But I was thinking about like how many games there are that just like come and go like that, where we're just like never going to see it again.
Yeah. Oh, there. It is weird to think that they couldn't like somehow bring stuff like that back. But
because I could probably talk to 50 people just randomly on the street and no one would ever heard of this game.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, especially in the game space where like games will come along and they just like disappear after that. Like,
I don't even, like, now that I'm looking around for it, I don't even know if you can play this game anymore. I mean, you can.
Well, that's like, what I mean. Like, could you, would you, if you wanted to play this, if you wanted to be nostalgic and go back and play this, would it even be possible to do so?
I can buy a PlayStation 2 copy of it on Amazon for $11.
Interesting.
But I don't have a PlayStation 2.
You'd have to buy a PlayStation 2 as well.
Yeah. I don't, it's probably not available on any digital storefront.
Yeah, that's what I wonder. Games preservation is such a weird thing.
Yeah. Where
I'm sure there are a lot of games that people remember that just like sort of don't exist anymore in terms of like being able to easily play them. But
I want to play this.
We should do a revive our old series that we
used to do. If I can figure out a way to get it on, because I guess it was available on Microsoft Windows. It was available on Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 2, and the original Xbox. So, I mean, it's a way to play this exists probably, but I would probably have to subvert the law somewhat to do it.
Well,
but maybe we will.
You,
I don't know.
If you do that, we should do a video on it.
We'll check it out.
But there was a bunch of games out this week, this last week, and it's crazy that you could almost put together a top 10 list based on everything that's come out, and we're not even through February
yet. It's true. Yeah, we're just in the first... We're not even through Q1 yet.
Yeah, it's insane. But so Banisher's Ghost of New Eden came out. I wasn't super interested in this, but it seems to be reviewing fairly well. It's sort of a linear like action game that, I don't know, it looks all right, but people have been playing that. And then I completely forgot about Foam Stars, but I guess that game is out and maybe has been even for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, I saw Leo Vader from MinMax was streaming it last week, or maybe at some point this week, and I hopped in to watch for a little while, and it was at the tail end of the stream, and one of his friends asked him, like, hey, after playing this for 2 hours, do you think you'll ever return to it? And he just sort of silently looked at the camera. Which is, I feel like, not great for Foam Stars.
Yeah, it like on Open Critic, it is not sitting at a very good score. It's crazy to me because I feel like when this came out and people got a chance to play it at like preview periods, packs. Yeah, people were surprisingly high on it, and then it came out and like no fanfare and nobody's playing it. Nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
Like I thought for sure there would at least be like a week long period where like all you couldn't tune into Twitch without like at least a few of the people you follow playing it. That didn't happen. Like nobody's playing this game. I don't understand. But so yeah, I completely forgot that this was a thing. And then I saw, oh yeah, it actually did come out, but probably worse than maybe even Suicide Squad at this point. But, and then Ultros came out. Did you get a chance to see any of this game?
I watched a couple of reviews of it. I didn't realize it had roguelike elements in it.
I don't know that it does. That it was unclear to me because I, like you, I looked up a review on YouTube, and one of the YouTubers that like reviews indie games had done a review, and in like the title they called it a roguelike.
Yeah.
And then I was reading the comments, and some of the commenters was like, yeah, this is not a roguelike. And then I looked at the Steam store page, and there's like no reference to roguelike elements. So it is unclear to me if that was just like the YouTuber was like, I don't know, gave it the wrong designation, or I don't know what's going on with it, but it seems all right. It seems like it's doing fairly well as in terms of reviews, and people seem to be into it. It has like a crazy art style.
I love the art style of it, and I probably will pick it up eventually. Is it available, do you know, on Xbox?
I don't know. It might be for now only on Steam.
Okay.
I haven't checked to see if it's on Xbox actually, but and then Skull and Bones came out, that game that everybody was waiting on for forever. Another one kind of like Suicide Squad where it's just like not people aren't super into it.
How crazy that it came out, though. You have to admit, like, congrats to them for finally releasing whatever this is.
Yeah, fair enough. They stuck with it. From what I understand, I think maybe IGN had done like some video about like, why is this still happening? And supposedly the studio like is in a country where there's like some sort of law where basically they had to go through with it.
Oh, really? Oh, because they're funded by the government? Like, they're, it's like an arts funding thing?
Something like that. I'm not sure on the details on that. So look it up and don't take my word for it. But, like,
Cyberpunk is like that. Because aren't they partially funded by some Swedish or... Where are they from? Like, Norway?
I'm not sure.
Project Red. It's somewhere.
I think
they're partially funded by the government, like some sort of arts grant. So, I mean, I somewhat understand this.
So, yeah, that it could be the case that the reason why it was in production for so long and they didn't just drop it and they had to go through with it and release it was based on, like, the law and they were required to do it. But it's out now and people are not super hot on it. And then... Mario vs. Donkey Kong also came out. This is like a remake of like an old GBA game. I haven't seen too much on this.
I don't like the look of this. It looks too... I mean, it definitely looks like a GBA game with upgraded graphics. And I don't think I needed like a full console release of this, even though it's like all nice and HD. I would have preferred like a... If they were going to do a Game Boy game, I would have preferred like a Minish Cap remake or something, which maybe already exists. I don't remember if that ever re-came out. But I don't know. This doesn't... I mean, this looks like a very, very easy game for, frankly, for babies.
Yeah, it, from what I've heard, it is an easier game, more targeting like a younger audience. It seems like kind of a decent co-op game, though. It kind of made me think of... like something like Treasure Tracker, where it's like just, it's not super difficult, but it's like a puzzle game that you can play in co-op.
Treasure Tracker was great, like, though.
Yeah, Treasure Tracker was great. I have no idea what's going on with this game. I haven't played it, obviously, and I haven't like read too many reviews, but it's getting like sevens and eights, so it's not like getting bad review scores. It's just like maybe not what Mario fans were looking for. And then another game I wanted to highlight, because it seems interesting to me, is a game called Deep Rock Galactic Survivor. And this is a Vampire Survivors like set in the Deep Rock Galactic universe.
It looks cool. It's like isometric.
Yeah, it's in early access right now, and it's like $8.99, and I believe it is playable on Steam Deck. Ooh. And if you like Vampire Survivors likes, like... I don't know. I feel like this is something to check out. Yeah, I watched some of this being played, and it does seem fun. I'm very curious about it. It's getting very positive reviews, according to the Steam store page. Mm. So maybe I will check this one out and try it on Steam Deck and report back on it at some point. But I've been playing too many other things right now.
Yeah.
I don't have time for anything else at the moment. So I did try out the Rusty's Retirement demo.
Yes. How is it?
It was fun. So this is that game where it just sort of, you load it up and it plays on sort of the lower section of your computer screen, just sort of over top of like your other windows. So you can still be like browsing the web or like watching YouTube videos and just like be clicking around on this little game. And it's sort of an idle game where you're doing like farming basically, and you're sort of building up your farm, and you can sort of use the crops. You like stick them in this like bioconverter thing, and you basically can convert that into money that you can then spend on more things. And so you will like build a little pod where like a drone will come out and help you like harvest the crops or water the crops and like move the crops from like the storehouse to the little bioconverter thing. And so basically you essentially automate the entire process. But because it's made by the developer of what is that Metroidvania that you liked?
Yeah. Haiku.
Haiku the robot. Yeah, so because it's made by the same developer, you can actually build a little house for Haiku the robot, and he'll like join Rusty and just like help him out around the farm.
Rusty is a character also in Haiku the robot.
Oh, is he? Yeah, I was curious because I haven't played that game, but I assumed that the other characters in the game were also from that game, but yeah, I wasn't sure.
Great NPC design in Rusty the robot. One of its strong suits is like the interestingly built little guys you run into.
Yeah. And there's like, you can build like a little mechanic workshop and a guy will like go around and upgrade your drones for you to make it so that they move faster and like have bigger carrying capacity and stuff like that. And right now the demo that's available is sort of restricted to like a small patch of grass in like the middle part of the screen, but you can like scroll to the left and right and you can see that like once the full game releases, you're going to have a lot more space to work with.
Yeah.
So you can like really build up a much larger farm with more buildings and stuff like that. And
it's such a good idea for a game. I think when we talked about it previously, I said it reminded me of one of those like desktop destroyer games where like your mouse became like a gun or a pair of scissors or a flamethrower and you can just like destroy your desktop icons. It's interesting.
It is like a really good idea for a game as just something like I was texting you about it and I was like, I really want this on my work computer.
Yeah.
It would be a bad idea. I don't recommend doing that if you're in like an open office environment the way I am, but you could like, I don't know, just be every now and then click around and have like be making progress on that while you're like doing your work. But
well, think about this. Everyone is talking about that new Apple Vision Pro. What if you just constantly had this in the lower third of your vision?
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool too. I'm sure they will eventually make games like that. But yeah, this is a cool thing. And like some of the crops, you keep unlocking additional crops that you can plant. And they're like, the requirements are, you know, harvest so many of this type of plant or whatever. And there'll be like three different ones that you have to harvest, and then it's like, okay, you unlock the next one and you just keep going, and you just like keep unlocking more stuff to do. Yeah, I really enjoyed what I did play of it. I think it's a nice little idle game that you can play on your computer. I don't know how much it's going to cost or when it's like officially going to release, but I think this was maybe part of that like Steam Next Fest like demo things, and so I decided to check it out and had some fun with it. Also, still playing Helldivers 2, which is awesome. Having so much fun with that. They have had a lot of like server problems, and like you will get kicked every now and then from games, and sometimes you will definitely have trouble with matchmaking. But they've been very good about like if you join their Discord, they've been very good about communicating. This is the problems we're facing right now. This is what we're doing to fix them. And then like once they implement fixes, they'll be like, hey, we fixed that thing. Here's like what we're doing now. So they've been pretty good about communicating via their Discord on what's going on with the game. But they are still definitely facing a lot of growing pains because the launch of this game has exploded beyond their wildest expectations, I would imagine.
Yeah. And
it's doing very well for them. Yeah, good problem to have. It's been fun. I do wonder like what the long tail for this game is, like what they're going to keep adding. I think I saw maybe there were like new capes they were going to add and some like maybe some new weapons, new stuff to unlock.
But you said there's two factions you fight right now, right? Isn't there? There's like bugs and robots.
Yeah, so there's the Terminids, which is the bugs, and then there's robots, which I forget what they're officially called in the game. Maybe they're just robots, but so right now I think a fun like cool little like sort of live service-y element that happened this last week was the way that the sort of star map is laid out when you go to join a mission is you have like sort of Earth and super Earth in the middle, and then like branching out from that you have like planets to the right and left that you can navigate to, and it'll be like you know, you want to go sort of do missions to sort of liberate different planets, and as it like gets closer, obviously the enemies are getting closer to Super Earth, which you don't want. And this last week, I feel like it's because not as many people were playing the robot missions as the bug missions. They were like, oh, there was the robots advanced to planets closer to Super Earth, and so everybody like go over there and do missions over there. And so yeah, everybody had to go do missions to try to liberate planets from the robots this last week. So that was sort of a fun little element, and you can kind of see how they plan to move forward with more content going forward, and how like the sort of live service elements might take place. And yeah, I'm curious what else they're going to add to it. Right now, you have sort of two, it's not a season pass, but it kind of looks a little bit like it, where like you have, as you play missions, you get medals that you can spend to like unlock new weapons and new like cosmetic items and new like armor and stuff like that. And so you're spending the medals you earn to unlock additional stuff. And then there's another one that if you paid for like the deluxe edition, basically you have like another set of those unlocks that you can be working towards. I do wonder if they'll do like a full on season pass style thing at some point, but they have not done that yet. Maybe they'll just add like, oh, here's the next wave of like stuff to unlock that you can just work towards. I have no clue whether that's going to be paid or free or what the plan is, but it's been a lot of fun to play so far. And I've really been enjoying it. But like I said, on Friday, I tried to play it and servers had reached capacity, so I could not play. But instead, I played Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, which I've been also really, really enjoying. I got into Chapter 8, which is like, I want to say a little over the midway point of the game.
Okay.
And that one, that feels like very fan service-y for like, because like one of the elements of this game is like, obviously you're playing as Ichiban for most of it. And it's like supposed to be this like fun sort of passing of the torch from the new character to, or from the old character to the new character. So from Kiryu to Ichiban. And so Kiryu's with you throughout much of the first half of the game. And then, like, he goes off on his own little thing back in Japan. So you're going back to the map that you had in the previous game with Ichiban. But now you're running around with Kiryu, and you're playing as Kiryu, and you have, like, sort of a different party. And so it a little bit took me off guard, because I was like, man, I really just kind of want to get back to Hawaii, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, but you are running around and sort of collecting memories and stuff like that. And it's a lot of it's very fan service-y, like, hey, remember this thing you did in a previous game. And so I was a little bit not loving that part of it. I was a little bit like, can we move on from this? Like, because I haven't played the other Yakuza games. And so a lot of that didn't mean anything to me. But they do eventually like make it make sense why you're back there. And it's like, oh, this is like, there's elements to this that impact what's going on in Hawaii as well. Mm. And so they did tie it back together. And, there's like more characters that join your party while you're there. And then it like, once you finish that chapter, cut back to Hawaii and now you're with Ichiban again. And so I think it's going to do that a little bit from here on out, where you're going to be maybe playing the two different sides of the story that's happening, you know, in Hawaii and back in Yokohama. And I don't know where it's going.
You can't swap back and forth, right?
You can't freely be like, I'm going to, you know, run around as Ichiban for a while, and now I'm going to like hit a button and jump back to Yokohama and run around as Kiryu. I think you are sort of limited to like, you're playing through a chapter right now. And so you're in this area. And while you're in that area, you're free to do any of the open world stuff you want to do, any of the mini games. But like, if I wanted to go do the Tsujimon stuff with Ichiban in Hawaii, but I was in Yokohama with Kiryu, I would just have to finish that chapter before it would let me go back. So that is a little bit of a bummer. But otherwise, like, I still love everything else about the game. So it's like not super impacting my love of it. But yeah, so I've made it through that. I'm in Chapter 9 back in Hawaii, and the story is definitely heating up in interesting ways. Ooh. So I definitely want to keep going with it and see how this is going to play out.
Racing to the finish line before Final Fantasy VII.
I was going to say, we're getting to a point where I need to really race to that finish line, because Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is... Is that the end of this coming week as it's recording this?
Well, no, it's the 29th.
Okay, so I do have another week to try to race to that finish line, but we'll see if I get there. before Final Fantasy VII comes out. But between this and Helldivers 2, I've been really having a fun time playing games lately. And as much as I want to keep playing Helldivers 2, I might need to just like, I need to focus and get through Like a Dragon before Final Fantasy VII comes out. What about you?
Zach, I watched the first episode of that Godzilla Legacy of Monsters show on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, I forgot about that show. Yeah.
It's where Kurt Russell and his son play the same character in different timelines, where like his son plays him back in like the 60s and his dad or and Kurt Russell plays like modern day, or I think it's like set in 2015, a version of him. But Zach, it's bad.
Is it? I wondered about that.
When we got done watching the first episode, my girlfriend turned to me and was like, is this the first thing we've watched that's been written by AI? And I was like, maybe. Because like the dialogue is just so awful and all the plot lines just are... I mean, I guess we only watched the first episode, but yeah, I don't recommend that show. I was looking... I mean, it's got good people in it, but...
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because like we've commented on how bad a lot of like the movies and TV shows have been over the last few years and how like I have increasingly been less and less interested in a lot of like the movies and TV shows that are coming out. And I think it is because the writing has been so bad for so much of it. And they went on strike for months last year because they didn't want AI to take their jobs. And now we're like, is what they're writing AI written? Like, we can't tell the difference now.
Well, part of it, I think, one of the things they went on strike for is, like, they, Hollywood, like, is now like, oh, you don't need a whole room to write something. You just need, like, three people, and technically we're not going to employ them. They're just going to be a weird kind of position where we don't have to give you insurance. And so things aren't written by rooms anymore. They're written by like day players basically. And they don't, and also shows no longer have like the same room for each episode. Now each episode is kind of written by a different team that don't get to talk to each other. And so I think that's another reason why things have suffered, but hopefully the strike will resolve some of that. They've said some stuff about how like rooms are going to be, they're not going to do that weird position anymore where you only work on a show for like 3 days so they don't have to pay you a certain amount of money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it was that they didn't want AI taking their jobs.
Yeah.
And I get that. I'm like on board with that, but also like, it's just hilarious to me that the writing has been so bad on a lot of shows that people can't distinguish between whether a real person or an AI wrote it.
Now, the other thing I checked out is I did dive back into Apex with all the changes that have happened.
Yeah.
I only played like one day.
Interested in hearing about this.
It's pretty cool. I still haven't really gotten a grasp on... it's a very much a different thing to grab a shield core as opposed to like armor swap when you've killed somebody. But I think it's a good change. And I guess it makes sense more if like... just logically, because if you shot a guy a bunch of times and you looked in his like belongings, he wouldn't have like a full armor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I mean, just like in the universe, I guess it makes more sense, but it's still pretty cool. I still am liking playing it. I haven't a thing about this season is they're unlocking characters for a certain number of weeks, and then if you do challenges, then you like get to keep that character basically. And the first week, one of the people they're doing is Seer, which I have always been interested in, but I have not played as him yet. But let me tell you, a ton of people are playing as Seer now. So like you'll be playing and you'll see those like little domes that he creates with his ultimate all over the place. It seems like a very fun character. But like I said, I mostly main Loba, and her new perks that she's gotten are pretty good. One of them, they're based around basically her little teleportation and her black market. So the first level is the teleportation. I think you can throw it farther, or possibly like it reduces the time it reloads at. But the other one is your black market is extended a little bit in radius as well as in height. And her second level is again something to do with the teleportation, or you can get three things out of her black market instead of two. And so I've liked that. I think that's a good addition to her kit. I have heard some people say that some people's perks are not great. I think that Horizons maybe are not great, but Bangalore seem really good. I've been seeing a lot of Bangalores because you can like heal in the smoke now, which is cool.
Oh, that's interesting.
They also, another important thing they did is they removed the ability to have that like sight that lets you see through smoke on SMGs. So you can no longer have one of those like red dot sights that you can like see through smoke on. I think you can only have them on like pistols and shotguns now, which is interesting.
Huh.
And I think that people have said that that makes playing Bangalore better because you aren't like, you can hide in your smoke more because people can't just like mow you down with an SMG that has one of those sights on it.
Yeah, that's fair. It did limit her usability because of not just those sights, but also like all the different like, what's the name of that one guy that can do the scan?
Pathfinder?
Yeah. No.
Oh, not Pathfinder. Yeah. What is it? Blood Thunder? Bloodhound.
Bloodhound, and like that class of characters makes it so that basically you could see through it anyway.
See, you're the same way. Yeah.
So yeah, so making it so that the smoke is still like in play is, I think, a good change probably.
But yeah, it's been fun. I probably will check it out a little more this week. I did get the battle pass, but I have not. I've only played like maybe twice since it launched on Tuesday. But I'm still liking it, and I still don't have a PS5. But maybe I will. I don't know.
Well, were there any changes to the guy that has the drone?
Yes, but I don't have him, so I don't know what his perks are. But I think he did. I don't think he's one of the ones people are complaining about, so I think his perks are good.
I was going to say, when last I played, I was actually playing a lot of that guy, because when I don't play with you, I typically will play like the mixed playlist.
Yeah.
And so like whether it's team deathmatch or that control mode, like it was pretty cool to just like throw the drone up in like a high choke point area. And then just like let it scan enemies as they came in. Cause like knowing is half the battle, right?
So yeah.
If you knew where the enemies were and where they were coming from, like it felt like you were contributing a lot to to those fights with that. So
I bet his kit, like I said, no one's been complaining about him as far as I've seen online. So
his, I don't think he's cool. One of the more popular characters, which is probably why. But
yeah, that's probably true.
But yeah.
But yeah, we should jump back in together sometime and check it out. Because I have not played any of that straight shot mode where it like really throws you into the action quickly. I have only played a couple rounds of the regular Battle Royale like trios.
Mm. I mean, at the moment, I'm racing to the finish on Like a Dragon.
Yeah.
And when I'm not playing that, I'm playing Helldivers 2.
As you should.
It would be fun to jump back in and check that out. I don't know that I'll buy the season pass just because I have so many other things to play right now.
They also, here's like something
Final
else.
Final Fantasy is coming out. But
It runs at, I think, 120 hertz if you have a 120 hertz monitor.
Oof. That's interesting.
It is interesting.
I have a 144 hertz monitor on my computer, but I would have to
hook it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have to plug my Xbox into my like primary computer monitor instead of the TV that it is plugged into. But that's interesting. Do you have any parting wisdom for this week?
Parting wisdom is food related.
Oh, a real change of pace.
Yeah. Did you see, we didn't talk about this, but Taco Bell had like that E3-esque presentation they gave about new foods coming out this year.
I did not see that.
They had a whole press conference where a guy was on stage and he was like, check out what's happening in the world of Taco Bell. The first thing that they released has come out, and it's called the Crispinata. And it's basically a little empanada that's like savory with like chicken and cheese. And I have not gotten one yet, but my parting wisdom is to check out the Crispinata.
Well, if you do, report back.
Yeah, I will.
Well, on that note, why don't you go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Starside Cafe, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.